This is an Enterprise Technology Management podcast, the independent resource for IT executives.
Hello and welcome to this executive panel podcast by ETM, your thought leadership resource and online community for the latest IT trends and technological developments. Today's podcast topic is on capacity management, and here to discuss this matter is podcast moderator Dennis Jogseff, Vice President of Enterprise Management Associates, along with his panel. Here is Dennis to run over the members of today's panel and the topics. Dennis.
Thank you, David. My name is indeed Dennis Jogseff. I'm a Vice President with Enterprise Management Associates, and I will, in fact, be moderating the panel podcast on capacity management, which is growing in interest, I have to say, for a lot of reasons. So I guess we'll hit on those today. I'm going to be joined with three folks from Raritan, James Zerwinski, and Robert Limbry from CA Technologies. And to jump right in now, I guess what I'd like to do is give a chance for James and then Robert to introduce themselves a little bit and share some of their perspectives or history regarding both their company's background and their background in capacity management, optimization, planning, et cetera. James?
Hey, good morning, Dennis and Robert. I'm the manager of software products at Raritan. Raritan software products include capacity, asset, and power management for data centers and labs. We like to say our technologies inspire the intelligent use of resources.
Thank you very much. And Robert?
My name is Robert Limbry. I've been working with CA Technologies in the capacity management space. And I've had 14 years working in IT. And the majority of that, I've been working in the performance and capacity management space. I came over to CA Technologies as part of the high-performance acquisition in September 2010. And now I'm spearheading the capacity management growth in the virtualization and service automation unit within CA Technologies.
With that, we're going to jump right into our first question, somewhat relevant to what I just said, I guess. And I'll start, James, with you in terms of how do you see the move to the virtualized infrastructure impacting capacity management software and disciplines and processes?
It's a good question, Dennis. Virtualization accelerates every aspect of adding, changing, or making moves. It now takes less time to add a new virtual machine than it did a physical machine. You can add more memory and CPU with a few clicks to that virtual machine. Remotion can move a machine dynamically. So as you can see, you have these virtual machines that are now much more dynamic and have sped up everything that used to take days. Now it takes minutes. Therefore, you need a capacity management tool that is as dynamic as a virtualized environment, because as you're making these changes to the virtual machines, and you're making them very quickly, the underlying infrastructure, whether it be a blade server or a series of servers supporting those virtual machines, that needs to keep pace so that you don't run into capacity bottlenecks such that your services cannot perform according to their SLAs.
I think there are those of us who would claim that virtualization in some respects is primarily a network phenomenon. What we mean by that would be that there's a high level of movement, and that you know, the very notion of blades and a chassis becomes this kind of miniature networked environment. But, of course, the interdependencies between network and storage and other components of the infrastructure are key, because systems don't exist in a vacuum. So I'm just curious if, with a system-centric focus, do you see that as very much part of a larger whole, or do you think really the systems is the lead thought here?
Okay, now that's a good insight. I see the systems as a part of it, and as you pointed out, when you make dynamic system changes, that cascades to the other components within the infrastructure, so your networking and your storage, that needs to keep pace. So capacity management needs to handle the full chain of components that are required to ultimately deliver the services that the customers expect.
What are your thoughts on some of the conversation you just heard in terms of virtualization is taking us in terms of capacity?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, what's clear is that the onset of virtualization has been a key disruptive force to IT operations. And to be fair, capacity management has struggled to keep up with the change. In many cases, we're seeing the role of capacity managers somewhat diminished by the lack of insight that they're able to bring to these kind of estates. There are several key risks. The risk of over-allocation essentially becoming configuration issues. So let's look at, for example, we talked about servers and networks, but let's just focus on, for example, a virtual server stack where, you know, the number of virtual resources being allocated exceeds the physical. And this is a key risk that needs to be managed within this estate, and it's the role of capacity management to ensure that these risks are brought to the table and made into an executive decision. But equally important is, and let's not forget the key drive, which drives the whole movement of virtualization, which is the cost reduction. So you've got a really interesting balance now between managing the risk of, you know, either service degradation or potentially catastrophic failure of the VM stack versus the cost drive. And it's the role of capacity management to make that insight accessible to executives who need to make the right call on investments and strategy.
So, James, I'm going to go back to you for the next shoe to drop on this, which is we talked about virtualization. How about the impact of cloud? Is that a similar discussion? Is it a little bit different? I know we could probably spend, and I would say it's not a terribly fruitful discussion, the rest of the call defining cloud computing. So I'm not going to suggest we do that, except to say that there are internal and external varieties, and following NIST definitions, platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, and software as a service for cloud. Do you see that? How do you see that as a trend impacting capacity sort of over and beyond virtualization itself?
Yeah, Dennis, you gave a good explanation of that, because what I was going to say is that the thing that makes virtualization different and the cloud different is that I think that in virtualization there's more of a homogeneous method and practice of deploying it. It's been out there for a longer period of time and is now, you know, fully into production. And so often what I find is that with virtualization, the organization that runs the actual virtualization environment is very much within the overall IT organization. These are people that have worked together for a long time and have ongoing practical relationships beyond the documented process relationships. Now, when you go to the cloud, it's still new, and there's many flavors of that. And so the first question is what type of cloud do you have, and who's managing it? And I think that's the new dynamic, who's managing the cloud. So let's start with probably one area where someone else is managing the cloud. So this now introduces a new concept that becomes very, very important. It's a concept where the cloud supplier is supplying capacity truly at an arm's length relationship, where there needs to be well-defined service level agreements, because now I need to roll out new services. I need to know that my provider of capacity through the cloud is going to provide me with the capacity that I need to deliver those services. So I need to have a very well thought out, well documented SLA as to what is the turnaround time and what is the expected delivery of that capacity.
Robert, I'd really like to spend some time with you on this, because CA Technologies certainly has a big investment both in the enterprise but also in the service provider space with the NIMSOFT capabilities. And I wonder what your thoughts are in the cloud environment in terms of how the service provider community and the enterprise are going to work together, and, you know, what technologies are going to make that most effective.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question, because if you look at the way that contracts have been written maybe over the last 5 or 6 years, you'll typically see that capacity management and cost management were not written into these huge, you know, outsourcing contracts. What the cloud is bringing us into is a world of greater agility. If you take a classic software as a service environment like Salesforce.com, you know, you can ramp up and ramp down your usage, and your cost is predicated by the demand. We see the same trend continuing in the cloud marketplace. We've already discussed in brief the theme that lowest cost providers who provide a quality of service that's adequate to you will prosper over the over a higher cost provider. What capacity management really brings to the equation here is the ability to manage the cost, since capacity costs you money. If you look at running a typical data center, if you look at running typical IT operations, you'll see that keeping the lights on, keeping the capacity lights on, consumes 60 to 70% of a typical operational budget. With capacity management, being able to deliver IT services in a leaner fashion, being able to implement a governance process around resource allocation, being able to control carefully both the costs and the margin that you charge on your IT services, leads you to prosper in an open marketplace. And, you know, that's where we see the greatest interest, actually, in cloud services coming from those MSPs who are moving towards that model.
Well, that's a very cost-defined view of capacity, and, of course, that's appropriate in many respects because capacity equals an investment. And it would also strike me that, and this perhaps might be an opportunity for you to talk about some of what CA Technologies can bring to the table, that unless you have a really good view of how your infrastructure is being used, how your services are being consumed, what the quality of experience is for your consumers, that you're basically dealing blind with any service provider in approaching cloud. So I'd be curious to get your thoughts on that, Robert.
Our feedback from the marketplace suggests that the primary driver of cloud services isn't actually cost. It's agility. It's the ability to flexibly respond to a changing business demand. So the impact of automation, of managing capacity, of or providing governance around resource allocation is actually a key driver in the adoption of cloud services, both from a customer's point of view and from the MSPs. And if I can give you an example of that, one of my friends is actually the CFO of a media company in London. And he told me recently that he had procured cloud services so that he could store digital content online. This is a classic example of cloud to me. This is where business users, the consumerization of IT, business users are now starting to interact directly with technology. And for me, the connection here, the connection between the business users, the consumers, and the provision of the IT is really driving the adoption of the cloud. And what's clear is that capacity management is a key part of the delivery process.
Got you. Makes sense to me. What are your thoughts in terms of capacity planning and optimization going forward?
Good question, Dennis, and Robert, that was a good response. When I look at capacity management, I'm really excited about the ability for the information exchange and the flow back of data to actually allow capacity management to take a leapfrog forward. So, for example, today, much of the capacity management is based upon engineering and planning assumptions. And so these assumptions are based upon some experiences over time, maybe rating information about the nameplate value of a particular server, about how much load it will draw. The assumptions are also dependent upon accurate asset information, meaning accurate information as to if you're looking at capacity in terms of use space availability in a rack, if you're looking at capacity in terms of power, if you're looking at capacity in terms of cooling in a data center, or if you're looking for capacity in terms of CPU, memory, and other components. So you need to have accurate asset information about what is actually available to you and what is actually in use. And so what I'm excited about is I see more and more customers looking for integration of systems to provide a feedback loop, if you will, a feedback loop of actual performance information. And so it's not that the actual performance information will totally replace the planning assumptions, but it's the understanding that if you compare the actual information with your planning information, you might be able to update those assumptions and have better assumptions that are more tightly, so you're not forced to over-engineer, if you will, and so you can keep your costs down and maybe extend the life of your existing equipment. So someone without good capacity information will always err on the side of overbuying, adding more capacity just in case because we're not doing a good job of planning. But if you improve the planning, you can then extend the life of your existing equipment, defer capital expenditures, and have improved operational performance. Now, in the area of bill back and charge back, that's another interesting area. A number of years ago, very few companies even talked about this, but I'm seeing more and more of the forward-looking companies looking to integrate capacity information with their financial information. Although this is not widespread yet, but the forward-looking companies are talking about, well, how can we do that? What are the interfaces that we need to do? What type of data needs to be exchanged? Because what they really want to understand is they want to have end-to-end tracking of the projects, of the initiatives. So they want to know right from the beginning, if I'm going to roll out a new service, if I have a new project, they want to be integrated with the capacity planning system so that in their business case, they can take into account the additional components that they might need that might not have been obvious to them, and they might not have learned about them until they were well within the project. So that business case can take into the full account how much equipment is needed, what software is needed, do I need more rack space? And so they have the full cost up front. And then over time, if there's an understanding that costs are going to be billed back first to customers, and then maybe in the future at a greater granular level in terms of services, there's a belief that those customers of that service will make better financial decisions, not necessarily just specify the equipment that they prefer from a peer performance perspective, but now they'll take into account the cost, and so you get a better request from the customer.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a service management bigot, a CMDB CMS bigot, and a cross-domain bigot, and a chargeback bigot, and I've been that way for a decade, and I'm actually seeing all these trends accelerate these requirements, also accelerate new design points for all of the above for visibility. So, Robert, I'd like to ask you a question that may give you a little bit of pause, but it's so take a breath if you need to, and I'll preface it by saying we've spent a lot of time, we've done some consulting in terms of politics and organizational structures in IT that favor a more efficient capacity optimization planning. Who, what skill set, what organization structure really ought to own capacity planning and optimization in an enlightened, progressive IT organization? Let's assume that we have some movement to break down the silos a little bit, because you'll never get there on a siloed basis. What's the optimal political structure and the optimal role structure for IT to assimilate truly cross-domain service vision with an impact on services? You know what services are running where, capacity planning and optimization.
I've got a couple of observations to bring to this. The first thing is, typically, a capacity manager in an organization has very little actual influence over capacity decisions. And a capacity decision to me is something like, how much hardware should we invest in this year? What's the best way of configuring this new virtual environment? where do we place these VMs? The capacity manager tends not to be in the loop on many of these key decisions. In fact, if you were to go to a typical organization and ask them, how do you calculate how much hardware to buy, you'll probably find that what happens is a few of the key architects, that maybe the VP of infrastructure, they go and lock themselves in a room for 2 or 3 days and they look at spreadsheets and they come out with a number. The capacity management process, the capacity manager, is not adding any value to this. That's got to change. That's got to change if you're going to deliver more efficient IT services. You need to know precisely how much hardware you need. I'll give you an example for that, and there's a pretty prevalent example in the case of SAP, which is a fuzzy logic answer. Effectively, the number of SAP architects will get together in a room and come up with a sizing number, and it's typically, you know, more than what's needed, and nobody wants to take the risk that it's not enough. So obviously, incrementally, it adds up, and it adds up. Every management layer adds a little bit more overhead just to reduce the risk. Actually, what a capacity management function should be doing is giving a precise, scientific answer to the question of how much hardware do I need, how much do I need to invest in it. And that's typically the kind of work that we get involved in. And I'll give you a second observation. If you go to any CFO and ask them about capacity management, they will know what you're talking about. The CFO knows what capacity management is precisely. So what you've got here is a chasm somewhere between the technical person, the technical capacity manager in IT, and the CFO. You both know what capacity management is, but all the layers in between are struggling to really grasp it.
I couldn't agree more. That's a really beautiful description of it. What do you think about, you mentioned optimizing hardware, the infrastructure. To what degree do you see portfolio planning as an extension of capacity planning and management?
That's a really good question, because it is all part of a life cycle, right? It is all part of a planning process, and project and portfolio management need to interface with capacity management so that it can be part of that provisioning cycle. Again, it's a question of integration rather than siloed processes. And what we would promote would be, you know, the integration of that project and portfolio management together with the capacity management process working in harmony.
I'm going to ask, kind of a soundbite related question for each of you. James, I'll start with you, and that would be, here's the scenario. You're a CIO or VP of equivalent VP role, perhaps maybe VP of Ops. I'm not quite sure, but let's assume that you're really have the executive oversight and control, and you are dealing with all the transiencies and demands that we described and then some, and you want to improve your capacity, planning and optimization capabilities in a strategic and efficient way. What would be the number one recommendation you would make?
Dennis, I'm a big believer that so much of what we have in terms of difficulties in doing things very efficiently is the lack of information. So when you have different organizations, and you talked a little bit about cross-domain, and you get these organizations together to try to make improvements, without good basis of information, it's very hard for them to agree upon an objective, a project plan, and a measurement infrastructure. So I'm a believer that if I was CIO or VP of Ops, what I would want to put in place is a instrumentation view of the data and the information that I think I would need to more effectively improve my capacity management. So, Dennis, I'm sure you're aware that Raritan is a major provider of intelligent rack power distribution units, where we actually meter energy consumed on an outlet level, so that we now have customers, after we've introduced that 4 years ago in the market, we now have customers that are metering with energy grade billable information, and understanding the actual energy consumed by their IT devices. And they're using that and they're bringing it back to their planning so that now they can go back and these interdomain, these organizations look at actual consumed energy, and they can then make real decisions based upon that. And I think the key is that it's that presentation of information that allows people to come together and move forward.
That's certainly good sound advice and makes a lot of sense. And so, Robert, what would you say to give this sort of fictitious scenario, albeit, but if you had one outstanding piece of advice to give?
I would say that there are actually many aspects to enterprise capacity management. As James mentioned, the aspect of managing power and cooling is one of those, and it's a high-cost item. But actually, there are many others, and it's when we start tying together all these facets of information that we start to provide the insight that allows executives to really start to provide more efficient services, better consumer-facing services, and deliver the cost efficiency that that everybody's demanding. In order to be successful, I would recommend that we don't take a siloed approach to capacity. We don't take a head-in-the-sand approach to capacity. Instead, I would argue that our first approach should always be to remember that what we're dealing with here is a cost versus performance question, a question of identifying the risks of either over-provisioning in a virtual landscape or the risks of service degradation at any point when we've got a hotspot or a bottleneck appearing in the system. Actually, the old methods of capacity management are starting to really struggle with these questions in a new, heavily virtualized, cloud-focused environment. What we need here is the automation coming with a tool, but the automation that provides the coverage for an environment that is constantly changing. If we're able to build on that automation in an incremental way, that's how we can truly achieve this sort of ideal of the cost-efficient service delivery.
That's great advice as well. I think makes a lot of sense. And certainly automation is one thing that all these cloud, in particular, virtualization is doing is really fired automation and much more dynamic solutions than we've had in the past. And we need to keep that trend. One recommendation, and we're talking to someone who can affect this, I would say, create a cross-domain services management group that has full authority, a full executive, including C-level support. Make sure you have a great mix of architectural skills, communication skills, and process skills. Invest a lot in the dialogue part, because you'll never get through the domains without dialogue. I've seen that a lot in consulting. And the last thing I would say, all part of this is, as far as ITIL goes, I would say ITIL's a great place to start. A lot of good recommendations, but for a lot of reasons that we're not going to have time to go into here, to be literal, strict, and formal in how you implement your process definitions through ITIL can be counterproductive in many environments. So it's a great inspiration, not necessarily a great Bible to get this done. This brings us to the end of the exclusive panel podcast on capacity management, brought to you by Enterprise Technology Management, ETM. I'd like to thank our panelists today and our audience for listening. Thank you very much.